There are some attempts to abolish the Electoral College or even to essentially nullify it, in effect. We're going to talk about that right now and what even is the Electoral College and why does it matter to us as Americans. Hello and welcome to this portion of Vocal Point. I'm Jerry Newcomb and our guest is Tara Ross. Tara Ross has written some books even on the subject of the Electoral College. You can visit her website at TaraRoss.com. Tara, welcome back to the program. So great to have you on again. And please, for the start of the whole thing, tell us what the names of your books are and the subtitles, because I think there's a lot of information just contained in the titles and subtitles alone.
Sure, and thanks for having me. I really appreciate it. It's good to be back. The most recent book is The Indispensable Electoral College, How the Founders' Plan Saves Our Country from Mob Rule. I have a kids' book about the Electoral College. It's called We Elect a President, The Story of Our Electoral College. And then the first book I wrote about the Electoral College is Enlightened Democracy, The Case for the Electoral College. So I've been doing this for more than a decade.
Okay, so what is the Electoral College as a starting point?
Well, it's a name that doesn't appear in the Constitution. It's kind of the informal name that we've developed over the years. But basically, it's a system of electing presidents in which the states have a role to play in the system, not only individual votes. Of course, we know that our individual votes do matter. The individual votes help decide how our state is going to vote. But we also have a system in this country where we incorporate both. We do individual at the state level, and then we do the state-by-state election later. And a president cannot be elected unless he wins a majority of the state's electoral votes, which is an election that is conducted in December.
Okay.
A month after we've all cast our ballots.
Right. Okay. So now we've seen situations where, for example, President Bush got more votes in the Electoral College, but less in the popular vote. And so, you know, some liberals were very upset about that. And then more recently, same thing with, Trump versus Hillary Clinton. So now there's a move by which some liberals are essentially trying to nullify the effect of the Electoral College. Tell us about that.
Right. So to get rid of the Electoral College system the regular way, I guess we'll say, you would need to have a constitutional amendment. And that requires 3/4 of the states to approve the measure. And of course, people who are against the Electoral College know they're not going to be able to get 3/4 of the states to sign on board or to sign up for this thing. So, and I think especially after 2016, where so many of the flyover states saw, hey, you know what, this thing helps to make our voice matter, they're going to have trouble meeting that bar, and they're not going to do it. So the idea that is on the table is to kind of do an end run around this whole constitutional amendment process by changing the way that states allocate their electors. Now, today, if you go to the polls, I said there's the individuals play a role, and you cast your ballots to decide how your state will allocate its electors, and the state will look to the state popular vote and say, oh, I'm from Texas. Okay, Trump won Texas. So all 38 Texas electors will go to Trump. And every state does some variation of this. Most of them do winner-take-all. Whoever wins the state's vote, that's how our state is going to cast our electoral votes in the presidential election. Now, what their idea is to change all of that and to say, okay, if you're a state, you're no longer going to cast your electors based on the state vote, but on the outcome of the national popular vote. But every state's afraid to try this on their own, right? Because they might get left hanging. So they've decided they're going to all sign a contract, and the contract will bind them to this plan. And the contract goes into effect when they have enough states signed on to win the presidential election. So this has been kind of going on behind the scenes for a little while, even though most people don't know what's happening. And they have 11 states signed on, plus D.C., so right now they have 172 electors committed to this idea that they are ready to give their electors to the winner of the national popular vote. So they would basically be leaving the Electoral College in place on paper, but in just the practical logistics of what we're doing, it would be a national popular vote.
So, by the way, I am assuming that these are all liberal states that are signing up to this.
They are so far all blue states, yes.
I don't like that term blue states, because blue stands for, I mean, the true blue, and red stands for communism. But that's another issue for another debate. Connecticut. Connecticut is one of those that has signed on recently. And you pointed it out in your piece that we have a link to here in the dailysignal.com, how this is very ironic about, you know, especially because Connecticut played such a critical role at the Constitutional Convention through Roger Sherman.
Right. Yes, so Connecticut just very recently, a couple weeks ago, was the latest state to sign on to the scheme. And it's sad because Connecticut has been getting away from this for more than a decade. I've been there multiple times to talk to the state legislators, and I was hopeful they would get through this session also without committing to the plan. But unfortunately, it didn't work out. So Connecticut is now on board, and they're joining 10 other liberal states to go with the measure. They do not have any like Republican-leaning states on board with the plan.
So basically, here's the impact. The way this would work would be if they have enough electors. You say they're up to 172, and I believe the magic number is about 270. So if they get about 100 more electors of these liberal states, so far you've got California, you've got New York, I believe Illinois, Connecticut, which doesn't have many electoral votes.
Massachusetts, Rhode Island.
Rhode Island. Okay, pretty soon it all adds up. And it could just be the type of thing then, if this goes through, you could have essentially Los Angeles, Chicago, you know, a few big cities, Washington, D.C., determine who the president is, always ad infinitum. It will always skew toward the Democrat side.
You know, and people have laughed at that idea for a long time, and they say it's just people like me fear-mongering. You know, this won't really happen. But if you look at the results of the 2016 election, Hillary Clinton got 20% of her vote from only California and New York. In fact, if you take California and New York out of the equation, then Donald Trump leads the national tally by about 3 million votes. And, of course, within California and New York, she got most of her votes from the big urban areas in those states. So, I mean, this is definitely what we are looking at. If the Electoral College were ever to be eliminated, or if these anti-Electoral College people were to get away with this contract, we're looking at a world where big liberal urban areas could dictate to the rest of the country who the president's going to be.
Is that constitutional?
Well, that's a whole, that's going to be a whole big mess is what that's going to be. I would argue that it looks like an end run around the constitutional amendment process, and there will be lawyers arguing with cases such as, there are cases that struck down term limits for congressmen, or the line item veto, that's the word I was looking for, line item veto. There are cases like that basically say, hey, you know, like almost like this is too clever by half, you know, you're gonna pretend like this hoop that you're making us jump through, and you're implementing exactly what the founders rejected, and then pretending like it's okay because you came up with some semantic way to get around it. You know, I mean, which is basically what's happening here, right? The founders deliberately rejected national popular vote at the convention. They said, no, we do not want to do that. The small state delegates said, no, we will, you know, they were never going to sign that constitution in the first place if this had happened. Mm-hmm. And now we're just going to pretend like, oh, yeah, the Constitution allowed for this the whole time. I don't think so.
You know,
it'll be a big court battle is what it will be.
Oh, my goodness. But I hope it never gets to that point. But
me too.
It is amazing, too, because when you get down to it, the founders gave us so much freedom that we've enjoyed, but they were very concerned about the abuse of power, you know, any one small group having, you know, lording it over the rest. And so essentially this electoral college system, which people complain about, you know, at election time, but the fact is it's something that really protects the people. Now, let's suppose there were no electoral college. Well, then all somebody like Hillary Clinton would have to do is just go and campaign in Chicago, Philadelphia, Los Angeles, San Francisco, and she'd be done. She'd go home and, you know, become the next president, essentially.
Right, and, you know, a lot of people don't know this, but the reason why Hillary Clinton ended up with this huge popular vote tally is because she got afraid at the end that she was about to win the Electoral College and lose the popular vote. So she, on purpose, went to some of these big urban centers and started driving up the vote because she just didn't want to be in that situation. But it's ironic because she did precisely what the Electoral College discourages, right, to go to areas that are friendly to you already and to drive up as many votes as you can. If she had just taken a little time to go to Wisconsin or Michigan or Pennsylvania, she probably would have won the whole election.
Wow. Explain about Connecticut and its historic role. So it's very ironic that Connecticut would be, you know, one of the latest to, you know, get on the bandwagon for this thing.
Right. I mean, you mentioned Roger Sherman earlier, who's in that article that I wrote for the Daily Signal. And he was one of the architects of the compromise that the delegates eventually came to. So we have a Senate with one state, one vote representation, and we have a House with one person, one vote representation. So the large state, of course, were happy with the House, the way that was decided, but the smaller states were happy with the way the Senate was decided. And Roger Sherman was one of the delegates that played a critical role in pulling that compromise together, which is really kind of the basis of our whole Constitution, that both large and small states we're going to figure out how to make this work so everybody has a voice in the process. And of course, the Electoral College just took that further because our electors are determined exactly in the same way. However many congressmen you have is the same number of electors that you have. And so it reflects that same compromise between large and small state concerns.
Why do they call it a college?
I don't know.
Oh, okay.
Why do they call
Connecticut the Constitution State?
You know, that actually has nothing to do with the United States Constitution, as I understand it. It has to do with, but they believe that they had the very first Constitution in the country.
Right.
And so I think.
But it is believed it's called the Fundamental Orders of Connecticut, 1639. Right. It is believed, though, to be the forerunner or a type of forerunner. It's the first fully developed Constitution on American soil, 1639, inspired by a sermon, no less. But what are the implications for this, and what can people do to fight this? And by the way, there's a video, it's almost like a cheap version of PragerU, but Robert Reich is talking in this media, and he's talking about how do we abolish the Electoral College? Like, it's this terrible, evil thing that the Founding Fathers saddled upon us, and we got to, you know, abolish it. And they even show an image of trying to shred the Electoral College. Well, at least they're not trying to shred the Constitution, at least not yet. How do we fight this?
You know, I'll say one interesting thing about that video that you mentioned is it's different than what they've been doing before. They've been trying to pretend like this compact, the contract among the states is not eliminating the Electoral College. But he explicitly says in there, we've got to get rid of the Electoral College. And that's really a change in language for that movement to admit that this was what they were doing the whole time. So as far as what you can do, I mean, in different states, it's different status in different states. I think this year it's probably okay, and we're waiting for the new state sessions to come up. But definitely in your state next January, look to see if a bill is filed and follow it and call your legislators. If you know friends in other states, help them to find out about this. Help educate them. There is a Prager University video about this that I hope is helpful. I narrated it.
Oh, good.
It's about 5 minutes long. It's an easy watch, but just to explain this. Hey, look, this is how this works. This is why we have it. I think education at the end of the day is just the best thing we can do. Even state legislators, they're mostly signing on to this because they just don't understand and they don't know. And over and over again, I have watched state legislators, once they understand it better, say, pull sponsorship of bills, pull bills altogether. I mean, and so I really go back to education is the best thing we can do.
All right, we're out of time, but TaraRoss.com is a great place to start with all that education, including your two books and of course, your article, which we link to. Thank you so much, Tara Ross, for being with us. All the best.
Thank you.